Many stories come out of war. Many are compelling. But every once in a while, a single story stands out. On his latest trip to Iraq in May, Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Phillips met an Iraqi boy the U.S. military had nicknamed Steve-O. His story appears in today's Wall Street Journal. It's the tale of a son who turned in his father and now faces a dangerous future. Michael Phillips joins us now. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for joining us on the program.
You're welcome.
So tell us a little bit about Steve-O. What makes his story unique?
Well, Steve-O is a street-tough, illiterate Iraqi boy whose father, according to Steve-O, was quite abusive and bullied him into joining the insurgency. The father had been an officer in the Iraqi military, and he, after the fall of the regime, seemed to sort of lose his sense of self and became more abusive around the home, according to Steve-O, and organized a 40-man insurgency cell. He forced Steve-O to participate in three missions attacking U.S. troops in Husseiba in western Iraq near the Syrian border, and Steve-O just didn't want to do it. And he seemed to have this resentment towards his father, and he turned himself into the U.S. military and turned his father in as well.
And that is where First Sergeant Daniel Hendricks enters this story. He's with the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment and joins us now. He and the rest of Dragon Company's 1st Squadron became close to Steve-O, and Sergeant Hendricks is on the phone with us from Fort Carson in Colorado Springs. And thanks very much for being with us.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Very well, thanks. So what did you think when you first met this boy?
Honestly, when we first met him, would have been about 3 December in 2003. He was one of several informants that had come forward at the time. We were really skeptical at first. His information didn't seem to ring out, but once we actually took him and he identified the location of his father as well as a weapons cache site, we were quite impressed with the information he had. And for being a illiterate boy in Iraq, it was amazing how much information he knew on the area.
And various people were picked up and interrogated on the basis of his information.
Yes, that would be correct. The primary was once we picked up his father. His father ended up divulging about 15 other personnel tied into the that Mujahideen cell that we were talking about, the insurgency. And then once I had some pictures on my computer. He just happened to look at them, and based on their pictures alone, he could give me full names and description. So he was more of a secondary source than he was a primary source.
Michael Phillips, your story, though, says in the process of this extracting this information, other people were threatened with this boy's information. We know, and here's how we know it. They showed him a picture.
Yes, according to the military people who were with him, the Special Forces soldiers who interrogated Steve-O were having a hard time getting information out of the interrogated Steve-O's father, having a hard time getting information out of him. And at that point, they showed him a picture of his son and said, well, here's how we know that you are indeed part of the insurgency. At the same time, another Iraqi detainee was present who was subsequently released. At that point, word got out in the street, apparently in Husseiba, that Steve-O had turned over to the Americans and turned in his own father.
And what happened after that, Sergeant Hendricks?
Basically, at that point, and I just want to iterate here on that piece. As we look back now, and I've got to say, I have never worked with a greater group of soldiers, the Special Forces guys we worked with. And you look back now, and it probably wasn't the greatest decision, but I'll tell you, his father was very uncooperative at the time and was not giving any information out, was denying everything. They made a decision to go ahead and tell the father as well as show him a picture of his son. And at that point, when they did, his father just caved in, started crying, and gave up the names of about 15 other personnel in that cell. So it was very, very successful. And it's depending on how you look at it, I understand how both sides of that coin can be looked at.
But it had some drastic repercussions for the boy's mother, though.
That is true. I will tell you, at that time in Husseiba, which is, I've been in the military 14 years and to some of the Army's finest tourist locations, first Gulf War, Somalia, Bosnia, Macedonia, and Kosovo, and I will tell you, I've never been in a more dangerous place than Al-Qaim, Iraq. I think regardless of if they would have shown his face or not, I have no doubt that the insurgency would have found out about him being an informant, regardless of that situation or not. Several other informants not dealing directly with our company, but within the area, were also identified just because of there were only so many places you could go to be an informant and talk to coalition forces, and they had insurgents in those areas that could identify them as they came to talk to us.
Michael Phillips, the boy's mother was killed, as far as we understand, and his life is now seriously threatened.
Well, it's not entirely certain that his mother's killed. A relative told the U.S. troops that she had been shot in the stomach and was presumed to be dead. And since that time, since that day that he appeared at the checkpoint and turned himself into the U.S. soldiers, Steve-O has been under the protection of first the Army and now the U.S. Marines, who are occupying the same area. It's generally assumed by him and by his military protectors that if he leaves on his own, he will likely be killed.
And Sergeant Hendricks, I know you're among those who are working, if you can, to bring Steve-O to the United States.
That is correct. Since we've come back, which was late March, early April, we've talked to a few senators through relatives and family members in Florida, as well as before we left, we went and talked to Dr. Piltz, which is out of the embassy there in Kuwait. And she was very helpful and gave us a lot of information, as well as we've gotten from others.
What are their chances? What are their chances, Michael Phillips?
Well, the biggest issue that we're running into is trying to get him adopted back here in the States. A lot of Middle Eastern countries do not allow their children to be adopted by Westerners. Based on the fact that Iraq does not have a government yet, they have not come out on a stance one way or another if they're going to allow Iraqi children to be adopted by Westerners.
So he's in a condition of legal limbo?
That's definitely the case. The adoption problem is a little more complex. He has a living parent. And pretty much in the United States, you would require a court order declaring his living parent, his father, who is still in U.S. custody, to be incompetent in order for him to be adopted by somebody else. And so that adoption angle would be a difficult one. Probably the most likely option for him is for him to get the parole, the humanitarian parole that was given to the Iraqi lawyer who helped Jessica Lynch at the time of the war, you know, a year ago. And that would just be a special kind of entry permit for him. But he'd still have to find somebody, of course, to take care of him here, a foster family, presumably.
And one reason why the story is being talked about now. Before we let you go, Michael Phillips, as we said, that area has been turned over from Sergeant Hendricks' unit to the Marines. What's Steve-O's life like now?
Steve-O lives with 7 enlisted Marines, 20, 22-year-olds, who are grunts. They're in the... At the Talqaim base, it's a barracks sort of setup with bunk beds. He has all of his belongings tucked into a wooden crate at the end, an ammo box at the end of his bed. He has some deodorant sticks he was given. He has a few other trinkets, an American flag, and he has First Sergeant Hendricks' floppy hat, which says Hendricks on the back of it.
And First Sergeant, I read that you told him you're going to have to give me this back when you get to the States.
That is correct. It was probably, of all the things that happened over there, I'll tell you, everything we saw, and the primary issue that we felt we were there is kids just like this deserve a better opportunity at life. I mean, he was a really smart, street knowledgeable kid that just, you cannot imagine what he goes through on a daily basis, to include the RPGs, the mortars, the machine gun fire. He's got more combat experience than some of the soldiers that I've known. So he was something for us that we really became very attached to him, and he put himself on the line for us, and we're going to try to do everything we can to get him back.
Sergeant Hendricks, thank you very much.
Thank you too, sir, and thank you very much, Mike.
First Sergeant Daniel Hendricks of the 3rd Armored Cavalry Regiment joined us from Fort Carson, Colorado Springs, and Michael Phillips of the Wall Street Journal here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.